Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condo over Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
How you doing, man? You alright?
I'm good, man. How the devil are you?
All good. All good.
How is the garage? Temperature-wise?
Temperature is an even, I'd say 24. Ooh. It feels about like that's about right, isn't it? I think maybe a tad warm.
But... maybe a tad warm.
Yeah, but it's
a little bit of sweat. Sweat on the neck and around the armpits, yeah. I'm glad the weather's getting cooler now, because I was definitely struggling. I feel like now I've hit my stride in terms of temperature. I'm comfortable all the time. I can exercise without feeling like I'm going to die.
It's the rain that gets me. You know, there's
so
days...
long summer. Oh, rainy days.
Hate rainy days. Hate rainy days.
Kind of like rainy days.
No.
I feel like
what, like one afternoon.
Hide inside.
I'll accept one afternoon of moist.
Yeah, I quite like it. I think it gives me an excuse to just be indoors and just chill and do things. When it's sunny, I get that guilt that kind of creeps in where it's like, come on, you should be out doing things. Throwing a frisbee or something.
Throwing a frisbee. I don't think I get guilty that much about not throwing frisbees. Very rare do I get guilty about that.
Yeah. On your own, throwing a frisbee on
some
your own.
Some people get Catholic guilt. Well. You get frisbee guilt.
Survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So, been a couple of weeks since the last episode. There have been some things happening in the world of horror. Have there really? I've said that, but now I feel like, have I missed something? There have been kind of some stuff.
I haven't seen that much knocking about. News-wise, not been too much happening, is there?
No, not all that much, really. I say that there was some talk of a new Alien film.
Oh yeah, Ridley Scott.
Pre-productions underway. Riddling Scott.
Yeah,
Riddled Scott. Apparently, it's called Alien Awakening, or at least that's a working title for it.
Okay.
But apparently, it's gone a bit stale. Although I've heard Ridley Scott has gone a bit stale, like a biscuit that's been left out.
Yeah.
But apparently he's going to go back and rethink the next Alien film. Because I heard it again, it was going to be like a not related to anything, not related to Prometheus, not related to Covenant, which is strange because we kind of thought that next up was going to be like a new trilogy that were all linked together. Mm. But Disney have purchased 20th Century Fox. So who knows what that's going to mean for the franchise going forward.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure they're not going to PG-13 it or make it relevant for children.
I like most of Ridley's work, but I'm a big fan of his chewing gum. You should go back to Nick and chewing gum.
Yeah, he's got some good chewing gum. Oh, Ridley. It was weird when they said, I'm making films, but I'm also going to make some minty gum. So he's made a new HBO series called Raised by Wolves, which looks
like
really
good. Yeah, that's good.
It does look really good. I've heard the reviews have been quite mixed. Like tonally, it maybe doesn't quite know what it is, but it does look really good. And it's like is it like an original property? Is it based on a book? I don't know. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's like androids and humans getting raised by androids, and then like these humans who want to get the kids away from the androids. Seems very, very exciting stuff. I'd like to give it a go. But there's so many things I've got to give a go. I've got like a never-ending list of shows currently.
The Boys like, is back in town.
The Boys is back good song, in town.
I don't know why I brought that up. have you been watching The Boys?
So I've seen the first series, but basically I've got a list now of stuff that I kind of need to watch before I start anything new.
Okay.
So I've got that. I've got Lovecraft Country that I haven't watched yet.
Well, The Boys is so easy to put on. Like it's like a refreshing glass of orange juice on a summer's day. Like it's just, you can just stick that on and not worry about anything for an hour. It's just so
don't worry
easy.
About that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I need to go and check it out. Because I liked the first series. But I think as time's gone by, I haven't looked back on it as fondly as perhaps I thought I would. Mm. I've kind of looked back on it and go, like, I didn't feel super excited about a second series. I was like, oh, well.
Yeah.
More of that, is it? yeah,
it is,
I need to watch
it. It's definitely, it's more of that. So if you want more of that, this is how you get more of that.
What else? I still need to finish The Umbrella Academy. I think I got halfway through that second series and just... I'm just not very good at watching series.
I very rarely watch series these days. Like I said, it has to be like The Boys, because it just has to be something I don't mind putting on. It's either that or Seinfeld. That's quite easy to put on at the minute.
Yeah. I watched all of I'm Alan Partridge recently.
Yeah.
Because that is just that just before bed, little Alan Partridge episode, maybe two if I'm feeling extra special.
X-Files is good for that as well. You can stick a random X-Files on.
Yeah.
Be happy with that.
Yeah. Good, all good stuff. But I feel like I enjoy watching films. It's like a one and done, isn't it? You kind of watch the film. It's over. There we go. That's it. You don't have to go, what's going to happen
commitment.
Next?
No commitment needed.
No, exactly. So news-wise, apart from that, apparently The Walking Dead is going to enter its final season in 2022. That's going to be it. Series 11. I don't think I've seen it since series 7, maybe. 7 or 8. And apparently it's going to be a spin-off with Daryl and Carol. Carol and Daryl. So I don't know what that's going to be called. Just call it Carol and Daryl because that'd just be a lot more interesting. Yeah. Norman Reedus. Yeah, let's see more stuff with him in for sure. I'm surprised he hasn't added more of a sort of movie career. I'm surprised he hasn't. I don't even know. Has he like headed up a single film?
He was in Blade. No, I don't think so, but Blade 2.
Yeah, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I thought after Walking Dead he was going to start popping up in everything, but he seems to have gone, popped up in Death Stranding, and then he seems to have gone, I'll just stick to The Walking Dead for now, and my little spin-off series. But apparently, there's Fear of the Walking Dead. There's something called The Walking Dead World Beyond, which apparently is about the first generation raised in the apocalypse. Mental. Almost too much.
Well, I saw part of episode 1 and then I was like, I'm jumping off here.
Yeah. I mean, I had some highlights and I had some lowlights and I had some really lowlights. And then I kind of just got bored. See you later. Goodbye. Not interested anymore. I think when it was closer to the comic storylines, it did really well. But then it kind of felt like it was going over the same ground over and over again. The group get somewhere safe. Then a new group threaten their safety. Then a main character dies.
Yeah.
And over and over and over and over and over. That's pretty much it.
Maybe I'll go to it and watch it at some point. But
it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
What else we got here? So apparently a novel by Adam Neville called No One Gets Out Alive, the writer of The Ritual, is also being adapted for Netflix. Tells the story of an immigrant in search of an American dream who, after being forced to take a room in a boarding house, finds herself in a nightmare she can't escape. The worst type of nightmare.
Yeah, I've only read that one Adam Neville book, The Ritual, but it was better. The movie's great, but it was better than the movie. So
I've not read more.
Yeah.
I've not read the book. So that's
fantastic.
That is very
really good. Yeah.
I love the movie though. So do you ever feel like you can go and read a book after you've seen the film?
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, the new Charlie Kaufman movie came out recently. I'm thinking of ending things. And I've not read the book, but everyone I know who'd read the book said, you should read the book. And I watched the film, and I'm a huge Charlie Kaufman fan, but I wasn't that keen on it. It felt too obtuse. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't yet. Okay. It's on the list. It felt too obtuse. Is that what you just... No way.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of Charlie Kaufman stuff is, but this felt like almost like unreadable. Like it felt Lynchian in some ways.
That's what...
In a different way. But then someone told me, these people who'd read the book said, oh, it's about this. And then finding out what the actual story was about, I was like, oh, okay, that does make more sense. Maybe I need to go back and rewatch it now. But I feel like maybe for people who haven't read the book, like it doesn't, I don't think it makes sense. Like you need a certain plot point for it to work.
Well, I kind of felt like that with Charlie Kaufman stuff. Like, am I saying it right? Synecdoche, New York? Is that what you say it? Synecdoche?
Yeah, I love Synecdoche, New York. And I didn't like it the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't like it the first time, but there's so much in that film. Like, you can just go back and find more and more in it.
I've only seen it once, and it was a long time ago. And I remember, maybe I just wasn't in the right frame of mind for it, but I was like, what is going on? What is going on?
Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, maybe I'll feel like that about I saw a tweet where someone said, I feel sorry for everybody who puts on I'm Thinking of Ending Things this weekend and thinks it's going to be a normal movie.
Yeah, it's weird because, I mean, like Eternal Sunshine, Being John Malkovich, those are amazing films that I kind of feel like anyone could watch and get into and enjoy the oddity of it because it's still kind of approachable. But
yeah.
Now that he's making his own, directing his own stuff, the Anomaly Set was kind of grounded, but still not a normal film. Synecdoche, New York is the opposite of a normal film. Like it's an insane. I feel like this film's kind of a bridge between the two, but it's way more obtuse. Like there is no discernible plot. Like not until like someone told me what it was actually about. I'm going to go to it again, but I don't know. But then again, sometimes I say these things about films and then they become my favorites. Same with albums. Like some music albums, I don't like it first. So I feel like I don't understand it. And then that's the thing that keeps me going back to it because I keep going back and going, oh, okay.
And you go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely want to check out. And I will. And I will. But yeah, that's all I've got really for news. Have you watched anything else this week or so?
I watched Venom because it was on Netflix. And I've watched a couple of these things. A couple of these films where it's like, I think what happened, I'd watched I'm Thinking of Ending Things and Love Exposure, which is my furthering Sion Sono thing. And it's a 4-hour film. That's an insane film. Yeah. But that's really good. And I was like, I put on Venom and I put on Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. I just needed some, like, just stuff that I didn't need to think about.
Had you seen either of those before?
No, no. Venom was way better than I was expecting it to be. Not good, like, in any sense of the word, but I've been led to believe that it was like utter dog shite. Like it was one big steaming dog egg, but it wasn't. It was it was completely fine.
I've only seen it once.
Yeah,
maybe I need to see it again, but I remember it being a bit of a clusterfuck and I kind of hated the final battle where there's loads of stuff going on. I was like, what the hell's...
I thought it was fine. I mean, the 12-year-old me would have been like watching it on repeat on VHS, getting those tracking lines because you watched the video too much. It was completely fine. And like, it was funny. It was kind of dark in a certain sense. The Venom character kind of felt to me like how Venom speaks. They got the voice. They did the voice quite well, I think.
Look, can I just one thing, Lady Venom. What the fuck was all that about?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you don't think about it too. I mean, it's not a good film. It's just completely watchable. Like it's. I mean, I watched some shit as a kid. This would have been right up there with the shit I used to watch. go on, sorry.
I'm just looking back at my review of it and I've written, there are times I even forgot Tom Hardy was Tom Hardy during this film, and not in a good way. It's like, I forgot he was Tom Hardy. I was like, what the fuck is he saying? What is he doing? I'll tell you what it reminded me of, and I've written that here as well. It reminded me of Ghost Rider at times. That sort of level of like superhero film, like something from 10 years ago with Nicolas Cage, like, being over the top while his head caught on fire. It reminded me of that.
Well, maybe it is. But But then, I mean, there's some funny bit. I like Tom Hardy getting in the lobster.
Oh yeah, what's on that? Oh yeah. Again, I've only seen it the once, so it might be going back to doing a rewatch.
I mean, it's like I said, it's not good. But Valerian, okay. The thing about Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Okay. I love the Fifth Element sci-fi style world. Like the design, the aesthetic is fantastic, and there's so many great little ideas in this film. But the lead characters and the story is not like it's just not fun. It's just not watchable. And like Dane DeHaan is not.
There's something about that Dane DeHaan where I don't know if it's since the Amazing Spider-Man, but I just can't stand the sight of him.
Yeah,
I just can't stand the sight of him.
Evil bastard. Yeah, I know what you mean. Like he doesn't. He shouldn't be playing like a lead action hero, cool guy type. Even sounds like he's putting on a voice in this film. Like he's trying to talk more like. Like Nathan Fillion or someone like that, like trying to be witty and.
Isn't Rihanna in it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then she dies. Spoiler, but. I mean, there's a couple of good bits. The best bits are where there's a bit like where Dane DeHaan's like running through walls, and every time he goes through a wall, he's like in a different, completely different atmosphere, like a different planet, like a completely different aesthetic. Those bits are kind of great, but they're just as. The story itself doesn't pull you through. It's kind of boring. It just made me kind of think I want to watch Fifth Element again.
Yeah. I went to the cinema to see this, and I think I kind of... Luc Besson, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I kind of, at the time at least, came out of it thinking, yeah, that was pretty good. But,
It's all right.
Three years.
Luc Besson's he's got a very specific style. Mostly his style is like a name that starts with L for the title.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Leon, crazy... Lucy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just those two films. But...
Luke. There's a film about you.
Up. Yeah.
It's coming up, yeah. So we both saw Tenet as well.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we
discuss that briefly.
You're a Nolan fan anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely a Nolan fan. And. Although I think the only film of his that I was a bit lukewarm on, was Dunkirk, which I think I could kind of appreciate the scale Styles. Of it and the Harry Styles of it.
Yeah.
But I think I was a bit meh on that. Wasn't particularly, but then for me it didn't feel so much like a Christopher Nolan film, whereas I think this. Definitely did feel like a Christopher Nolan film.
Yeah, it felt like a James Bond audition. Like it was like, I want to do the next James Bond film. How do I show people that I can do that? I mean, I tell you what, the soundtrack is amazing. And
soundtrack's nuts. Yeah,
certain bits. I probably don't want to spoil it too much because people probably still want to go and watch it. But there's certain bits. Like halfway through the film, a thing happens, and then a guy goes for a thing, and then it's Nolan does that a lot. He does it really well, where it feels like you've gone to a certain place where you didn't think the film would go, and it's like you're going into a completely new world. Like the bit where in Interstellar, when he goes over the black hole, you think that's the end of the film. No, it's going to more's going to happen there now. There's a bit in this, and I was like, that's amazing. Like he can create old school movie magic. He can still kind of wow you.
Yeah, and there's lots of stuff in this film that like I've never seen before.
Yeah,
in a film, or at least never seen it done this way. And I think up until about the halfway point, I was pretty much not into it. I was thinking, nah, I'm not quite feeling this. Like this something not quite working for me.
I didn't understand. I didn't understand. No, the plot.
And then something like sort of clicked into place about halfway through. And I felt like, okay, I think I understand what's happening now.
Yeah.
But then a spanner kind of goes into the works in the final act where I was thought I understood the rules and then certain things were happening and it was like, yeah. It was pretty nuts.
The big fight scene is so much going on and the timelines are going both ways. I had no idea. I had literally no idea what was going on.
It was. I thought it was very innovative, very experimental. Pretty groundbreaking, but it's a cinematic experience, one that's probably the best to see on the big screen. And you know, even if you didn't like it, I think you can still appreciate the level of fault that's gone into the filmmaking, because I think the only thing I didn't like was there were big old exposition dumps. Sometimes it was like, right, these are the rules.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And here's why. And I think maybe the stakes were too high. It kind of became an end of the world scenario when I thought maybe it didn't need that. I don't think it needed that. You know, it could have, in terms of James Bond, I mean, I know sometimes we get end of the world scenarios, especially in like the old with the older films. But I think as time goes on with the newer Bond films, the stakes are a little bit lower. They're kind of like,
yeah,
something to do with international security rather than someone's going to blow up the whole world. And I think maybe the stakes needed to be a bit smaller. And I think I would have been a lot more into it.
Well, it's like Inception, like the stakes in that. Although they try and make them out to be a lot bigger than they are. Like, it's just a business thing. Like, someone wants someone to break up a company.
Like,
it's quite a really small, weird little end goal. But yeah, I think I want to watch it again. I think it's pretty cool. I just was very baffled by a lot of it.
Yeah, and I think it needs another watch for me to fully understand some parts of it. But
yeah,
I'd definitely check it out again for sure.
Yeah, man. What else? I think that's mostly. It's mostly it, other than Fright Nights.
Okay, I got just a couple more, but I'll speed on through them. So I saw the Train to Busan sequel, that Peninsula.
That's cool.
So pretty disappointing. It felt really generic, based on Train to Busan. I rewatched that as well, and that's like unbelievably great. Just like really action. Action heavy, and just like feels
same filmmakers.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure, but yeah, feels like that feels like a really good zombie film that kind of breaks the mold in a way.
Yeah.
Whereas Peninsula just feels pretty basic. You know, feels like a long Walking Dead episode. The effects were a bit naff. That's pretty much it. And then I did see the New Mutants as well, which kind of like tries to be a bit like a horror film. It kind of wants to be a horror film, but it like never fully commits.
Yeah.
Like, as right, we're a horror film now, but actually we're not going to commit. And it wasn't great. It was pretty messy, but I think overall it was entertaining enough. It's just, it feels like the end of this era of X-Men films, and it doesn't feel new in any sense, which I think it was trying to be.
Yeah,
that's like old New Mutants.
I might have read this wrong. The guy who created the New Mutants complained, firstly because it doesn't match the New Mutants tone, but also because they spelled his name wrong in the credits. Or something.
Yeah. So I think they've definitely taken some liberties with the characters, not just the nationality of some of the characters and the way the characters are presented, but they also spelt Bob McLeod. They spelt.
To be fair, the McLeod surname can be spelt in a number of ways, and sometimes it's not spelt how you think it should be spelt.
I think someone would have just Googled it though.
Yeah.
Someone just got it.
True. Yeah.
Someone just done a quick Google, but they gone there. But yeah, I mean, I'm not massively familiar with some of the characters. I'm more familiar with some than others. But apparently, they just took some liberties with the characters in ways that he wasn't particularly happy with. But yeah, it's entertaining enough for 90 minutes, but it's not gonna change your life. And I felt kind of the same with Mulan as well, so I watched Mulan this week, and it's just a bit soulless in terms of I've not enjoyed many of the Disney live action remakes, but this just feels a bit soulless. It's not really got any music or any of the more fantastical elements.
The Red Dragon.
There is no Red Dragon.
Doesn't sound. Were you sure you watched the right Mulan? I don't know.
yeah. I definitely was. But it just feels like the magic of Mulan just felt like it was just void of that. And it just.
Yeah.
I was pretty disappointed.
There's some great music as well in the.
Exactly. There were no songs. You thought maybe that they put some like orchestral cues.
Yeah.
Well,
they're using it for the trailer, aren't they?
That were familiar.
Oh, there's also that Donny Osmond song. that's really good. There's like some metal covers of it. Do you know,
it's Donny Osmond's song.
It's that good. It's like a like a training montage song. I'll find
oh, what the let's get down to business song.
Let's get down to business. Down
to business. I thought you were talking about, I didn't know. Is that Donny Osmond?
Yeah.
The
Did they send me dollars?
That is, or did they that send is probably the best.
Me guns.
Did they send
me
bums?
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite Disney songs. And yeah, it wasn't in there. So yeah, that was pretty disappointing.
That's tragic.
And I'll just quickly do a little slap through some horror I watched. I wanted to watch some 90s/2000s.
Yeah, you've been watching
on it. I watched a couple. I watched Valentine, 2001 Valentine. I don't remember it massively well. It's got Denise Richards and Angel.
David Boreanaz. Yeah.
Basically, every single character in this film sucks. The men are like the worst people in the world. Like, they're absolutely awful. Everyone's a twat. The women are just shallow and horrible and bitches. And I just think, who am I supposed to be rooting for? I want the killer to just kill everyone. Angel. Maybe that's the point. Angel was awful. Angel was so boring. I was just like, what is he doing there? He was just shoved in for the sake it was him. And then the final reveal is like meaningless to the point where there are repercussions.
He's not the killer. He's the killer, right? I thought.
We're spoiling Valentine 2001. He is the killer,
yeah.
But it gives you no reason or understanding to why he's the killer and how he became part of these people's lives, because it says he was like a kid who was bullied and he had a nosebleed. But I was like, beyond caring. It revealed him as the killer and then it ends. So you don't get any reason or anything for it.
Yeah.
I was beyond caring. It was, even the kills weren't that good. There's like a kill in a hot tub, which I suppose is kind of all right.
Denise Richards.
But yeah. Denise Richards in the hot tub.
I wonder why I remember that.
I wonder why you remember that, you dirty boy. Denise Richards is looking peak the Denise Richards in this film, may I just say. Around about the time she was in the Bond film as well, I think.
Yeah.
Christmas. Isn't that her name? Christmas Jones.
I wonder why I remember that.
I watched Urban Legend as well.
Yeah.
I've got quite fond memories of this. And you know what? Yeah. Much, much better than Valentine. Pretty fun. It's got Jared Leto in it and Tara Reid and a few other people. It's a pretty, like, for a post-Scream 90s slasher, it's solid. The twist at the end doesn't make all that much sense. Logically, you're a bit like, well, would this have happened if this was the case?
I used to love this genre of films growing up. And there's like certain scenes that I remember, like something about Pop Rocks and Coke. And I think Jared Leto or one of them pretends to.
There was one of the worst moments in this film, though. this film like made me cringe so hard. So it's got the dude Joshua Jackson, isn't it, from Dawson's Creek. There's an awful bit where he gets in a car and another character gets in the car with him, and he turns the radio on, and the Dawson's Creek theme is playing.
Yeah,
he turns it off and goes, "Oh no, not that." And I just think, why is that in the film? Do you know what I mean? Like, in 1998, everyone knew he was in Dawson's Creek. You didn't need it to go, awful.
Yeah. There's a few death scenes, like the microwave thing I remember kind of getting to. Oh, and there's like the bleach, like toilet de-clogging and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
So I kind of watched these as an appetizer because I thought we could watch and do an episode on, I know what you did last summer, if you're game for that.
I was going to suggest, just before you even said that, I was like, you know which one you should watch is I Know What You Did Last Summer.
We discussed it as one of the possible ones we should do.
Yeah.
So I think let's just do it next.
There's another one of that era that's meant to be good that I've never seen, Cherry Falls. I always hear that one coming up in those
somebody
sort of
said some. Somebody said something about that recently.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've seen that. So maybe I'll add that to list. These films have been really hard to get hold of, though. So like Urban Legend and Valentine, I ended up having to like rent them on YouTube because I couldn't find them on any streaming service. Cherry Falls has got Brittany Murphy in it. I think my mum mentioned that to me.
From 8 Mile, the one who died, right?
And the last one I'm going to mention, so I watched The Dead Zone last night, the David Cronenberg Stephen King adaptation with Christopher Walken, who ends up in a coma for 5 years, not doing much walking, and he wakes up, and he's got like psychic powers. Stephen King loves a good psychic powered protagonist.
Yeah. We've got Michael. Is it Michael? Not Michael Douglas, is it? Who's the
Martin Sheen?
Martin Sheen. That's the one.
So there's there's like a bastard.
A
bastard politician who Christopher Walken sees as like launching some nukes. He becomes president, launches some nukes, so he decides to like go and take him down. It's not really a horror film.
No.
It's weird, like it's science fiction thriller, I guess you'd say. But Christopher Walken's great in it. He's awesome. And it's just a really good, it feels just like a really good, well made film. It doesn't feel Cronenberg too much. I guess this was just 83, so this was just
Stephen King had like a right good time around that time. So Shining, what else came out? I think that all of the big ones came out around that time, right?
Carrie was in the late '70s. The Shining, Cemetery
probably.
Christine around about then, 1985, Christine possibly. Yeah. Pet Cemetery probably a few years after.
At some point, the quality started to dip. And then the floodgates were open.
No way! Yeah. Another one I've got on my list to watch is Thinner.
It's a great book. I've not seen it. In fact, I think I saw it on Netflix, and I was reading the book at the time. I was wondering how they were doing some bits, so I kind of flicked through. It didn't look as good as the images in my mind.
Directed by Tom Holland, who also directed a film called Fright Night.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Do you like that segue? Do you enjoy that segue?
It's good. Lovely there we segue. Go. Fright Night. Have you seen the remake, by the way? The Colin Farrell.
Yes, I have seen the remake, but around about the time it came out, and not since. So I don't remember.
Same. Yeah.
I just remember who's in it.
David Tennant.
David Tennant.
Is
Colin
it
Farrell
or Tennant? Tennant.
Tennant.
Okay.
Tennant.
The Tennant.
Weird if it's Tennant, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anton Yelchin as well.
Anton Yelchin's great.
So, Fright Night, 1985 American horror film written and directed by Tom Holland in his directorial debut. That's pretty special, isn't it? Mm. The film follows young Charlie Brewster, who discovers his next-door neighbor Jerry Dandridge is a vampire. When no one believes him, Charlie decides to get Peter Vincent, a TV show host who acted in films as a vampire hunter, to stop Jerry's killing spree.
Yeah. IMDb has got 7.1, 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think the user rating was like 77. Letterboxd.
92%.
Yeah. On like 30 reviews as well, so.
Ah. Well, that's right.
Yeah. Letterboxd, 3.6. Have you got much of a history with this film?
I remember like seeing just the VHS cover in like my mum's collection for a long time. And I think I remember on the back, it's got a picture of the girlfriend. What's her name?
Oh, yeah, with the face.
With the face. And I just remember looking at it and thinking, oh my God, I never ever want to watch that.
Yeah.
It took me a few years to get around to watching it, but I think I probably watched it when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And I remember being really scared of it. And in particular, the werewolf or like wolf transformation scene, which like seems to go on forever.
Yeah.
And seems to have so many different levels to it. It's like, I just remember being really scared of that and like just not wanting to really look. So, and I think I've probably seen it a few times since then, but this was the first time in a while.
See, I don't think I watched it growing up at all. I think the first time I kind of recognized some of the imagery from it, but I think the first time I watched it was maybe 3 years, I think maybe even when we were doing this show. It's a bit, now I do watch it, I see it as the sort of the 80s classic. Like it's such a, like a classic setup, and the prosthetic horror makeup is so exemplary of this time. It seems to me like a pretty iconic 80s horror film. So I don't know why I never sort of watched it, never got around to it.
I've really misremembered it though, because when I was watching it, I remembered there being far more vampires in it. Maybe I've like remembered
the sequel. Yeah.
It might be the sequel, yeah. I think I need to go and watch the sequel again, because I was a bit confused when there was, because really there's only two vampires in it, isn't there? Well, three.
Yeah, but
sorry.
I'm not sure about one of them, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Because one of them is in the daylight, but I don't know. Huh. But he doesn't
maybe
get staked,
fully...
so he does. He must be a vampire. Yeah.
Maybe not fully gone all the way yet.
Yeah.
He's on second base.
Yeah. So, Chris Sarandon, who, I mean, I recognise, I guess, but not from much recently. He plays Jerry Dandridge, the vampire. Very smooth looking guy.
Very smooth.
Charlie Brewster, which is a great name. I think that it's just such a good name for that kind of character. Peter Vincent as well, that's a great, great character name. He plays Roddy McDowell plays Peter Vincent. He's the like an American Peter Cushing who's in these Hammer style vampire killer movies. And he casually disposes of vampires in hundreds of films, and now he has to kind of do it for real. It's not quite the same.
So he was in like Planet of the Apes and stuff, wasn't he?
I think I recognize him for a few things.
I think he was an ape, wasn't he? Wasn't he an ape? In Planet of the Apes, obviously.
Yeah. We were all apes at some point in time.
We're all apes at some point, mate. Yeah. We're all little bacteria fishes, little tadpole.
Yeah.
Good times, eh? Good times. Nostalgia.
Amanda Bearse. Didn't really recognise her that much. She plays the girlfriend, Amy Peterson.
She plays the girlfriend. No disrespect, sorry. No disrespect to Amanda Bearse. But initially I was like, the girlfriend? She looks like 35.
She does later she's on like, as well. Where she like grows her hair out and stuff. Yeah.
She's like in school. And I was like, no. I mean, I know like they took some liberties with kids being in school like back in the day, like Greece. Like there's definitely a 45-year-old bloke in Greece. but I was like, surely not. But there we go.
I recognized Evil Ed, Stephen Jeffries, Edward Evil Ed Thompson. He's got
an absolute nut job.
Yeah. So in the 90s, he was in a lot of gay porn. And then he went back to do Hollywood films in the 2000s. I was looking at all these actors to see what they did afterwards. Chris Sarandon.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. During the 90s, he was in gay pornographic movies using the alias Sam Ritter. Do I dare Google that?
Well, I don't know. Do you?
Well, I don't know. Here he is. It's just a picture of him with his top off, oiled up.
There you go.
Evil Ed. What if they did a gay porn version of Fright Night?
What would they call it?
I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, he was off his nut in this film. I was just
almost
like,
to the point
Christ.
Of being annoyed. Like,
yeah,
unbelievable. Like,
you wouldn't want to be around him, would you?
No one laughs that much. Maybe some people do, but I don't know. It felt like a proper caricature rather than a real person.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit frustrating. I was like, just turn it in, mate, innit? Just give it a rest.
Yeah. But then again, they're all kind of playing like caricatures to some point, to some note. I mean, like Peter Vincent playing the sort of, I don't know how you call it, like a Hammer horror type person who's like desperate for money. And so it was good. I mean, all the characters are really well defined in this film. Like it's very solidly put together.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of them are in the sequel as well. Well, I know Charlie Brewster is. So, yeah, if you want a little bit more of it. So I think it's called Fright Night Part 2, isn't it? Which is only a couple of years later. Charlie Brewster. Oh, Peter Vincent's in it as well. Roddy McDowell. And looks like that's it.
It's only those two. Yeah.
No Evil Ed, no Amy.
Okay. So the film starts with Charlie... And Charlie and his missus are macking on each other. Is that what they say in America? Macking.
What's that mean? We're like getting down to it.
Snogging.
Macking.
Yeah, I think that's what they say in America. Macking. Macking one off in the
corner.
Don't
tell me that, and then I'll go to America and I'll say, "Do you want to fancy a Mac?" And they go, "You dirty, rotten sod."
Yeah.
Get out of it.
Big Mac.
Fancy a Big Mac. Well, that's what I meant. Yeah, definitely. They're macking off, yeah.
But whilst watching Peter Vincent's like a Vampire Hunter TV show that he does,
just gets you in the mood, really, doesn't it? If anything,
yeah, this all happens within a very short space of time. So they're macking the TV. Peter Vincent's on the TV, he does this kind of he kills a vampire so casually, like he kind of just there's a vampire in the corner of the room. Someone's screaming, and he goes, "Hang on, it's like he's."
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Going to fix a sink. Like a leak in the sink. He's got his little toolbox, takes out a couple of bits, really casually stakes this guy, gets a bit of blood in his face. It doesn't even seem to bother him. Like, he's so easy. And if you contrast that to how he is when he actually kills vampire, it's quite effective. And the neighbor moves in at that point as well. So we get it all within like 3 minutes.
Yeah, something like the same evening. Neighbor's moving in.
Yeah.
His mum's like single, and she mentions at some point she's like, "Well, I wonder if he's wonder if he's looking to get busy with someone."
I wonder if he
wants a Mac, an older woman. I say an older woman. How old is he, Jerry Dandridge? In this, he looks like, I mean, he's probably 100 years old, considering he's a vampire.
Yeah,
but so he moves in, and he's got like a bloke he lives with, isn't he? Who's his?
Do you think there's a thing about gay, like a fear of gay couples? There's maybe not outwardly, but the way he's always eating apples.
I'm looking forward to where this
very
going.
Sort of, I don't know where it's going, but I just remember thinking like they were looking suspiciously out of the window at this couple of men who'd moved into this house, and Thingy was like eating like apples, but like really.
Well, even Charlie's mum says he's probably gay.
Okay.
That. It's a weird one, isn't it? Like, so initially, their distrust, Charlie's distrust of him comes at the point that he sees like women going in there. Isn't that right? He sees like a woman going in there.
Yeah.
And one morning, there's like a woman going, "Oh, excuse me, is this number whatever?" And he goes, "Oh, no, it's that one next door." So that's what his suspicion becomes of. But yeah, I mean, I see what you're trying to say is he's eating apples like a gay man.
I just thought, like, it's mid-80s, people had ridiculous fit. I mean, I'm not saying that the director felt that way. I'm just like wondering if he was playing into that element a bit. But I don't know.
Possibly. The 80s, obviously, were a difficult time for a lot of different things. So maybe. Who knows? Who knows what the undercurrents were? You couldn't eat an apple
without people like thinking,
going, "Are you gay? Are you eating an apple? Are you enjoying that? Was fruit and veg one of your five a day? That's gay. You want to eat nothing but meat? If anything, that's gay." Phallic symbols.
Yeah.
There we go.
Or maybe the thing about Adam and Eve. Maybe the snake eating it. I don't know. I feel like he was eating a lot of apples for it not to mean something. Like every scene, he's eating an apple.
There are definitely...
Why is he a vampire?
I'm going to disregard the apple bit, because there might be something to do with that. But I think there's a lot to be said about like vampires and the way they're portrayed like sexually.
Yeah.
And especially in the 80s, like when we're obviously AIDS and things like that.
Yeah.
It was very prevalent. And, you know, safe sex was sort of just coming into the realm of things. There's something to be said between that comparison and vampires.
And this film is super like, you know, when the biting scenes start to happen, like
there's a lot
porn trumpets. I think there's some porn, like Symphy porn trumpets.
Porn trumpets.
Yeah.
There's something to be said. Yeah, there's definitely, I think there's correlation between vampirism as a disease you can essentially catch from somebody.
Yeah.
And sexual connotations as well.
That's quite a potent idea. I'm sure it's been done in a few different ways. I know drug addiction is a big, has it been done as like an STD kind of thing? I guess that's more the zombie. I don't know. But it feels like there's more. There's
it something. Follows.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not a vampire, obviously. But basically, what you're trying to say is Jerry Dandridge, the way he ate an apple just awoke something in you. Couldn't say what it was. But
exactly.
He was eating apples a lot. And I always thought that vampires couldn't consume human food. But I guess depending on the film, depends on
well, it depends
the way
on
you
the food. It. If it's an apple.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Because you all remember about the guy eating chips in What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, yeah.
He was chundering for days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
But yeah, I guess depending on, you know, depending on the film is the way it takes the vampire lore and the way it makes things. Because you always see this in vampire films where there's a crucifix and they go, huh, don't work on me. Oh, that's just in the films. That's just in a book. And other films that kind of take it really seriously.
But just to visit the apple thing one more time, he eats so many. He eats so many that it's almost like vampires don't only lust for blood in this film. Like they needed a ton of apples as well.
Maybe that's kind of part of his trying to look like a normal human being.
But I see a man eating that many apples. I'm like, there's something not right.
I mean, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. The doctor's never going near him for like ever again. Sorry, have you had any apples recently? He's, about a few.
If he goes to the doctor's, his face is on a piece of paper behind the desk. Not allowed in, mate. The amount of apples you've been eating.
You again. You saved some for the rest of us. Jesus.
You know doctors are allergic to apples, which is why, there you go.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, anyway, yeah.
So he sees like a woman going into the house, and then later that night he sees Jerry Dandridge getting it on with another woman, and you see his like weird, creepy hand, and then he closes the curtains. Jerry Dandridge, if he's been a vampire for so long, he's not very good at like trying to hide the fact he's a vampire. He's only been there a few days, and already the kid opposite has seen enough.
Within the space of a day, like curiosity, like people are suspicious.
Yeah, like he must have come across that before, or at least him and his
close the curtains before you start.
Familiar dude's not going very through.
Yeah,
because Charlie goes across to the house and tries to go into the basement, and then the familiar guy, what's his name? Billy?
Yeah, I think it's Billy.
Like Billy. Comes. He like kind of comes out and goes, what are you doing, man?
He's a weird guy in this.
Yeah, he is a weird guy. He's just a bit annoying. I felt like I kept thinking, someone give him a slap.
Yeah.
The bastard. Charlie tells his mum, tells his friends, and they kind of all dismiss him. You know, what you're talking about. Of course, there's not vampires that live opposite. You're a crazy person. And Charlie Brewster quite quickly involves the authorities. He basically calls and says that he saw them getting rid of a body like the day before. So a detective comes over to kind of question, and Jerry's not there initially, is he? I think he's Billy says he's away on business.
I think that just means he's in the coffin.
He's asleep in the coffin. He's away on business. He's got some business to attend to because he gets up at
napping.
6 p.m every day.
Very
lazy.
Yeah,
needs to be done.
So at the same time, Brewster's relationship with Amy is not good because she wants to have sex, or I think she's ready to take the next step, and she doesn't feel like he's taking it seriously because he's constantly looking out his window, constantly going on about this neighbor. Ed. I think Ed just keeps calling him crazy at this point.
Keeps calling him crazy, but I think he's like got some vampire facts for him at some point. He's like, don't worry about it. He can't get in your house unless he has an invitation. And pretty much that night, Charlie comes back to the house and Jerry's been invited in by his mum to basically clear the air.
Yeah.
Because he called the cops on him and said that he killed someone.
I think those scenes where Charlie's looking out the window. And he sees Jerry Dandridge. It's the vampire's name is Jerry.
yeah.
And there's that sort of, both of them know that he's a vampire, but like no one believes thingy. And it there's quite something quite scary about it. I don't know. It feels quite.
Yeah, and what's really strange is that rather than Jerry just kind of allow it to fizzle out, I guess, or allow Charlie to suddenly be become disinterested by it, he quite quickly just reveals his vampire identity and threatens Charlie.
Yeah.
Who comes and visits him at night, and he basically says, "You either forget that I'm a vampire." Nice. Couldn't he have done that thing? What's the thing where he does a Jedi mind trick? What's it called? It's called. It's got a word in it.
What do you mean? Like a glamour or something? Or
glamour, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it. So, what, can he not do a bit of that? Can he not go, you never saw me doing this, you twat.
And you don't remember me calling you a twat. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that either. It seems quite risky, I feel, because
basically that breaks all of his stuff. Like his mum's like saying, keep the TV down. And then like his cupboard gets annihilated. Like that must be like,
what are you watching in there? I'm watching
Home Improvement.
Changing rooms. Yeah, watching changing rooms. They're smashing the shit out of a cupboard.
Yeah.
We should see it.
So I don't know what happened. So thing goes round, he gets stabbed in the hand. Oh yeah, so he's gonna kill Brewster, I think. But then Brewster stabs him in the hand with a pencil. I don't know why, like, he's like, it's burning his hand like crazy. And his face gets, he looks like a proper vampire then. Like, his face is revealed.
He looks like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly, like halfway through a transition. And he's got the weirdest, longest vampire hands. They go, these weird, creepy, long vampire hands. So, Charlie basically gets given a chance to forget, but he basically starts a bloody war. And Jerry like hangs him out the window, doesn't he, at some point?
Yeah.
Oh, he stabs his hand with a pencil, doesn't he? Not with the crucifix.
Yeah.
And doesn't he like Jerry destroys his car? Like, goes, right, that's it, your car's getting it. Street Fighter style.
Does that happen like off screen?
I think so.
I thought that's just a weird thing to add. Like later on in the film, I guess maybe it's a functional thing, like that means he can't escape or something. But it just seemed like the next day someone was like, oh, he's destroyed my car. Maybe he didn't do it. Maybe some kids or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
It seemed like an extra detail.
Sounds like a good excuse.
Yeah.
And then what does he do?
Peter Vincent involved at this point.
Yeah, that's right. He doesn't follow him around town yet. This does a little bit later. So he tries to get Peter Vincent involved, who's like basically just been told his show's cancelled. Because people aren't scared of that anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it's a few years since Hammer Horror stuff was kind of popular. And he kind of dismisses Charlie as an obsessed fan to start with, but then Charlie's really pushing. But he just drives off.
Yeah. But then he's like, I'm going to kill the neighbor. He knows he sleeps in the coffin in the day, so he's going to sneak down there. So Amy and Ed decide to get Peter Vincent to come and stop Charlie from killing the neighbor. And the way they do it, I mean, they go to Peter Vincent's apartment, and Peter Vincent, like, he's just been told he's got no job, or he's going to get evicted or something like this. So it's played really well. It's pretty funny, the conversation between them all. There's the idea that he keeps saying, I've just been offered a role in Hollywood or something. And then she's like, oh, yeah. I can pay you. Oh, how much? Like, he's instantly sort of turned on to the idea.
Yeah, he's a bit down and out, but
yeah,
he sees a chance to make a quick buck.
Yeah. So they called the neighbor and they were like, we're gonna convince Brewster that you're not a vampire. And the way we're going to do that is by showing you a cross. It's like, no, I can't cross here because I'm a reborn Christian. I didn't know that was a thing. I mean, I know there's reborn Christians, but I didn't know they didn't like crosses. Same with holy water. They don't like holy water, so you can't make this water holy. So then they all go to the neighbor's house. Charlie, he was convinced that he's a vampire. Everyone else is like, no, he's not, but they're going to convince Charlie, because Charlie's turning into a nutcake.
He's just not letting it go. Yeah, so what do? They all decide to meet up at Jerry's house. I mean, I don't know what Jerry is trying to sort of gain.
Yeah, so I was thinking this. Why is Jerry playing along? Unless it's some sort of game for him. Because at this, he seems to care too much about what Charlie thinks of him.
Doesn't seem to make sense. Either kill him or like just stay out of it. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, especially it's a little bit strange how casually he goes and kills them, like people later on. Like he turns head on a bit of a whim. I don't know. It seems strange, but it's a cool little scene though. They give him the holy water, and even though he says it's not blessed to him, if I was a vampire, I'd be like, "There's still a I'm not. Yeah, sniff it.
Are you sure? You wouldn't drink it all, would you? You might glitch. You might go.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's blessed. But he goes, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
See, delicious.
Volvic. But yeah, so it doesn't explode. Bruce is like, I'm still not convinced because yesterday I saw your face melt.
Yeah.
So I'm fairly certain.
Remember when your face melted? Nah, that never happened.
Yeah.
Gone meant.
But on the way out, Peter Vincent was checking his makeup or something in that little mirror. I don't know why he gets it. And he notices that thingy doesn't cast a reflection.
I'm assuming this is the first time Peter Vincent has come across a vampire in any form.
Yeah, I think so.
And, you know what I mean? He doesn't seem totally terrified. He seems a bit like, oh no. A little bit. You wouldn't be like, well, what the fuck?
Well, I think he's putting a face on, isn't he? I think he's trying to still be cool.
Yeah.
To these kids.
Yeah, there we go. And he drops and smashes the mirror. Obviously, I guess Jerry at this point knows, obviously he must have seen it. He leaves, and Jerry like goes after them, doesn't he? He goes like after all of them, because Ed and Amy and Charlie sort of like go off. Where do they go? They kind of go into town, don't they?
They're walking Ed.
That's it. Walking Amy home, and then Ed obviously goes off into like an alleyway and gets hunted down by Jerry. This is weird because Jerry seems pretty cool now with just killing all three of them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
he's a bit like wanted to hide his identity, and now he's fine to just hunt everybody down and murder them.
I like the idea that he starts to turn people. It feels a bit more Salem's Lot, like the way he sort of. In fact, there's a lot of similarities to Salem's Lot. Having a what's his name? What's his name? Colt? Billy. Him having a Billy. They call him the Master and that kind of thing. So it is quite scary, this bit. I mean, they're kind of running through town. Ed, poor Ed, who you don't like as a character or as a person, but you kind of feel sorry for him, and it's like an annoying little dog, like puppy or something. Like, he doesn't deserve to be like turned into a vampire. And also, he seems really scared, but Jerry's like, take my hand, Ed, and no one will ever bully you because you're dead. You are quite annoying. Ed.
You know, I know it. Yeah.
You won't be any less annoying. I can't. No.
In a way, more annoying.
Yeah, yeah. So he turns him into a vampire, and then he's like, I feel like going clubbing.
This bit was so 80s. Like, it kind of did make me think, oh, I wonder what it'd be like to go clubbing in the 80s. Like, this just seems pretty nuts. It's like, why did they? I guess they're running away and they decide to go into a nightclub because it's going to be busy, and they think Jerry's not going to be able to kill them in front of everybody else.
Jerry can't go inside unless he's invited. See, I don't think that's true in this bit. I mean, he must have been invited by someone, but like in
Do you want to come in? Come on in. Yeah. He had to get a bouncer to.
He
ask
had to show
to
a couple of dance moves outside. We didn't see this bit on the film.
But yeah, obviously very, very erotic. This bit where he's kind of like, I guess, hypnotizing/ dancing with Amy.
I guess I can understand why now they've cast her as a sort of an older an older girl playing a slightly younger girl, because she has to be like suddenly sexualized quite a bit.
It's true.
And she's supposed to be like 17 in this or something like that. So
and we're supposed to like believe that like Jerry's, you know, gonna cop off of her, I guess.
Yeah.
And for it not to seem as creepy as perhaps it actually is.
Yeah. I mean, they start dancing. I mean, it's like, I don't know what that dance move is called. I don't know what any dance moves are called, but it's definitely not jive. I know it's not that. It's this very sort of sharp, like it's a, like she's presenting her neck and then taking it away. And it's like slight sudden movements. I don't know what you call it.
A bit, she's been a bit of a tease.
Yeah.
Driving Jerry nuts. He just wants a bit of blood. And we find out a little bit later that his lost love, he's got a painting of someone, hasn't he? His lost love.
Don't know where she went.
Like, pretty much. Where did she bloody go? She fucked right off. She looks like Amy. So, because when he sees her in the house earlier, he kind of went like, he went,
Amy,
that's her, isn't it? That's her.
Like, that looks a bit like Amy, but her teeth are a bit too small. I think I know how to fix that.
Her teeth are a little bit too small. The one problem she always had, small teeth.
Yeah. Anyway, so in the craziness of it all, he steals Amy. I think he glamours her. He must do a glamour. Or maybe it's just the power of dance.
It's like a hypnotism, isn't it? Well, maybe it's the power of dance. Yeah, dance can be very powerful in the right hands.
Yeah.
Not me. Dance with me is just, it's probably got the opposite effect.
Yeah.
If a woman was attracted to me, if I danced, it would then put her off.
Yeah.
Be unhypnotized. She'd go, fuck it out, Jesus Christ. The state of it.
Yeah. What do you call it when you dance the ska music again? Is it skanking? Yeah. Skanking. That's what I do. It's never worked.
What's he doing? He's skanking over there. What, to Adele? Yeah.
Yeah. And also he kind of annihilates a couple of bodyguards. Bounces.
Yeah.
He kind of takes one's throat out and.
Yeah, but it's like bouncers that get sort of dragged in to basically sling him out, and he fucks people up. This is the thing. He'd be so keen to keep his identity hidden or whatever. Why is he just out there murdering everybody?
No CCTV back then. You could get away with this kind of stuff.
That's true.
No social media. No one can be Facebook hunting. Who's that? That's like following like a tag chain to try and find him.
Who's that guy with the really weird long hands?
There's a few of those like club photos, like really ugly club photos of his face all greasy. Greasy for, yeah. With a blue tongue for some reason. Somebody's drunk.
Yeah, he had a good night.
Yeah.
He leaves, and then Charlie basically goes and ask Vincent for help again. But before that, Ed does go to Vincent and attacks him. And Vincent like burns his head with a crucifix.
Yeah.
It's quite iconic, like the makeup and the vampire effects in this. Like if you saw a vampire from any of these films, you'd know it was a Fright Night vampire.
Yeah.
There's something very specific about the way they look, which I think is good. It's good that it's got like a unique look.
I think the special effects are really good in this and the creature design. I don't know who did it. I don't know if it's one of the big players. Do you know? Do you have a quick look?
I'm not sure, actually. Makeup and visual effects. Richard Edlund, who apparently did some stuff on Ghostbusters.
Oh, well, Ghostbusters was good as well. So
apparently they just completed work on Ghostbusters when they started to work on Fright Night. So there we go.
Okay, yeah. It's really good. So Ed kind of like scatters, and then we start to come towards the end, the final act of the film. Peter Vincent decides he's going to try and help Bruce. How does this? I don't know how this
works out. So I think Charlie goes back to, after all this has happened, he goes back to Vincent and basically asks him to help.
Bloody
help me.
But he says no. He's going to run away or something. I kind of feel like...
So let's have a look. So I think obviously... So he gains help. So initially frightened Vincent refuses, but then reluctantly resumes his vampire killer role as Billy approaches his neighbor's house. So he like takes a big box of all his bits and bobs.
Yeah.
Like crucifix, holy water, stakes, all that nonsense.
And the house is like super spooky now. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It looks like it's one of the houses from the films.
Yeah. So Charlie's crucifix is the only one that really has any power because he's like actually got faith in it. So they kind of explain that. So when Peter Vincent shows him a crucifix, it doesn't really work. But as soon as Charlie does, he's like, oh, that does work a bit. Oh, I did do that to me, you bastard.
How does this play out? Because Peter Vincent ends up in Charlie's house. I can't remember how that logically works now.
So I think, so Bill says, Billy appears and knocks Charlie unconscious over the banister, leaving Vincent to flee to Charlie's house. So he just runs away. He goes, right, that's enough for me.
Okay, all right.
See you later. I'll go back to Charlie's house. Yeah. But there he gets attacked.
How does he know where Charlie's house is? He's not been there
yet. It's just next door. So he goes to the wrong side.
Yeah.
And just ends up in Mr. and Mrs.
Smith's house.
And then obviously Ed is attacking Charlie's mum. I don't think he's killed her or hurt her.
No, she's out. She's at work. She works nights or something.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
He's pretending to be Charlie's mum in the bed.
Doing a voice, isn't he?
Yeah.
And then he turns into a wolf and runs towards Peter Vincent. Vincent.
Yeah.
But then what does he do? He's on a broken table leg that Vincent like holds.
Most of the furniture in that house by this point is like sawdust.
Just like the dust.
Yeah.
And he sticks like a stake right into Ed, like as obviously he jumps down. And then we get like a really long practical effects scenario.
It's like it really got to me this time when I was watching it. So Ed, he from his wolf form turns back into his human form very slowly. And then, like, he's like obviously in like crazy pain, like, he can't get the thing out of him. He's like breathing slower and slower. And Peter Vincent just watches him die and he's crying at the end of it. Like, he's sort of, it's really brutal. Like, it's really sort of, and I think it just works so well because of how casually he was kind of killing these vampires in the film and like how he kind of brushed it off as a, I don't know, it works, it always worked for me, but. This time I was watching, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is quite effective. Like, it really got to me.
Yeah. And that scene was the one that really, really did terrify me when I was a kid. And I really struggled to watch it. It was just the length of time it goes on for. If it was just a couple of quick scenes, then I probably would be able to deal with it more. But it just goes on and on and on. It's like agony.
Yeah.
You kind of feel the agony of that character as he's turning back in. Brutal.
There's some weird, like, goopiness as well. Like when it's like rebuilding his human hands, like it's some sort of melted goop in reverse thing happening. So at the same time, Amy's turned into a vampire next door with Brewster locked in. Peter Vincent runs over and then he breaks inside to let Brewster out. I don't know why, but they just decide to leave Amy on the floor. They're like, she's helpless. I don't know. But as they're coming out, Billy comes to stop them. And he gets shot in the head. At this point, we think Billy's a human. He's been out in the sun. Yeah, I've not seen him eat many apples, but he's mostly...
He's eaten no apples.
Yeah.
In fact, he hates apples.
Not seen him eat anything. So Billy gets shot in the head like five times or something ridiculous. And he gets back up. And then they stake him, I guess.
They destroy him somehow, but he's not a vampire. He's just some sort of undead.
Yeah.
He melts like into green goo and sand. So I guess he's supposed to be like some sort of zombie. Is that what we're thinking?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. He's some sort of ghoul or monster or something.
Some sort of ghouly scoop. So like, maybe like Jerry has made him somehow out of something and Clay. Gave him life.
That's why his face looks like that.
Yeah, this is just my face, mate. Well, there's something off about it. I don't understand.
Someone made that from mud and sticks or something. You've not spent long enough.
So, around about
kiln.
This time,
get back in the kiln.
Get back in the kiln. You're all.
He needs 5 more minutes to golden brown. Yeah. Anyway, go
around about this time, it's like pretty much like the sun's coming up, and there's a bit where Jerry transforms into a bat and attacks both of them, but then he goes straight for his coffin in the basement.
And when they get in there quick, super tight.
I mean, that's the shortest night ever. Actually, maybe it's not. Maybe the I guess the night started around about the time.
Also, that death scene of Evil Ed was a long time. Maybe they sped that up.
That was a couple of hours, and everyone in Jerry's house were just standing around waiting for it to happen.
The reason Peter Vincent was crying is because his legs were aching. He's like, fucking hell.
And this is take number 700. So they go down to the basement where Jerry's in his coffin. They open it, try to stake him through the heart, but then Amy is like transforming.
Someone needs to do that joke at some
mistake
point.
Him.
Like, it wasn't actually a vampire. Oops, what a mistake. Everyone laughs.
Everyone laughs. Even the crew. The take is ruined. So Charlie's fighting off Amy. Why is her hair grown? Why is that part of her transformation? That her hair has gone from like a little pixie cut or a little curly cut, little 80s curly cut, to now a shoulder length. Is that what happens? If you want to grow your hair, you become a vampire. We're onto something.
Yeah, well, I do feel like the film gets, I don't know why it happens, but I feel like the film gets more gothic. So Jerry looks more and more like a Barlow. Is that his name, Barlow? I can't remember. More and more like what you'd expect a creepy old vampire to look like. More of a Christopher Lee sort of looking vampire. And what's his name? The house is getting spookier. What's the face? Gets longer and more gothic, evil hammer horror looking thing. But then she's got crazy big mouth thing going on.
That's mad. That was pretty scary. Also, Ed, when he was pretending to be Charlie's mum, his mouth was like much bigger and teethier. Yeah.
She's like, do you want a Mac? Should we do some macking? And he's like,
no. That's
a Big Mac.
I'd rather do anything but. And then it's like a traditional, like, killing a vampire scene where, you know, holes in the basement are being created.
Yeah.
So the sunlight's pouring in.
There is some Ghostbusters style special effects. Like the way energy is rotoscoped onto the celluloid. Yeah, that's super Ghostbusty.
Very Ghostbusty.
And
then he dies. And does he explode?
I imagine he probably does. Yeah.
Yeah. He turns into a skeleton.
Yeah. With wings.
And then to dust.
Yeah.
With wings and into dust. The effects when he's a bat are pretty good as well. Like, he looks batty.
Yeah. There's a bit where he's not yet a bat, but he's outside a window and he's kind of crawling around. He looks a bit like a moth that's trying to get inside to the light. Like, he's kind of clumsily scattering around.
You're not coming in.
It cuts to a bit and later. I think Thingy's watching TV again. Bruce is watching TV, but doesn't want to watch it anymore.
Yeah, I think Peter Vincent is basically, he's on TV and he says there's going to be a hiatus from it, and he's going to present something new called Octoman.
What's going to be about?
Which I think it was a film in the 70s, like a monster film in the 70s. So, and then they're both watching the film, and then he gets up, turns off the TV, and then doesn't he think he sees like some eyes in Jerry's house?
Yeah.
And then obviously we get a little ending thing just before the credits roll. We hear Ed's voice saying, "Oh, you're so cool, Brewster."
In that dead annoying voice.
That dead annoying voice, and I'm like, why keep him alive, innit?
Yeah.
He's not even in the sequel, I don't think.
Still stuck in the basement. He can't get out.
He's still stuck in the basement the old bloody time. And there we go. That's it.
I've got some.
That's the end.
Not trivia, but I've got a bit of a name game for you.
Very nice.
So for new listeners, I've found five of quite unknown films that have similar sounding names to Fright Night. The first one I found was about a guy called Brewster who finds out that his neighbour is a right shit, but not unrelated, he's also Scottish. Do you know what it's called?
He's a right shit and he's Scottish.
Yeah.
Um, put those numbers onto my tongue. No, go on.
Shite Night.
Is it going to be awful? Shite Night. Is that it?
Yeah.
Shite Night.
This other film I found was about a guy called Brewster, and he discovers that his neighbor's just moved in is the personification of the period of time when the sun goes down. Yeah, I don't know if you know what that one's called.
Personification of the period of time when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
What is that called? Sunset? No.
After, I guess the period of time after the sun's gone down. That should be it.
Night, night.
Yeah. Well done. Okay. This one, I don't think it works. Brewster, this character called Brewster, realizes he's in fact Guinevere and that his neighbor is actually Sir Lancelot.
Night, night, but K N.
Well done.
GHT.
This one
definitely works.
This one
definitely
could be
works.
Could be quite offensive. I'm not quite sure. So Brewster Brewster discovers that his neighbor is secretly both a man and a woman, and he has to fight society who doesn't treat his neighbor with the proper respect. I mean, it's fairly it's all in there. His neighbor
is it
secret.
Topical?
No, his neighbor is secretly a man and a woman, and then Brewster has to protect him, her, from society, who they don't treat him with the proper respect.
Hermaphrodite night.
Yep. Well done. And the last one.
I mean, it's not offensive because okay. we weren't saying anything negative about hermaphrodites.
No,
who do exist. So there we go.
The last one. It's a weird little film I found. It's about a character called Brewster, and he finds out that his neighbour is secretly chocolate covered rose flavoured jelly.
Well, Turkish delight night.
Correct. Yeah.
Secretly, how would you maintain that as a secret?
Well, at first he maintains a secret, but then he's not bothered, and it's quite obvious that he's actually chocolate covered rose flavoured jelly.
I haven't had a Turkish delight, a chocolate covered rose flavored jelly in a long time.
Well, good, because they don't taste very good. I think they're one of the worst treats you can give anyone. Like it's like giving someone a chocolate
soap.
Yeah, it's like giving someone a bowl of custard and there's a slice of cucumber inside somewhere. Like why would you give them? It's like giving someone a beautiful garden. And there's a landmine somewhere in there. Like
that's better. I like that. That's a better one.
Like it looks great.
There's a landmine in there somewhere, and you've got massive boots. You've got Dr. Martin boots on, and you've got to walk around looking for it.
If you want to enjoy the garden, yeah. But it's a great garden. Have a potter around in there, Grandad. By the way, there's a landmine. Watch out!
Watch out! Oh, blew his legs off.
Yeah, I mean. Well, don't we need to rate the film. I think you're going to go lower than me, I'm going to suspect. I'll go first, because otherwise you won't know if I'm just going.
Maybe I'll change it to keep on it.
I mean, for me, every time I watch this, I like it more and more. It's the grower. I mean, I liked it the first time, so it started from good. It's just grown to great. It's just really cool. I love everything about it, really. It's maybe the next time I watch it, it will be an A-, but it's not there yet. It's a B+ for me at the minute.
Okay. Do you know what? I was thinking B+-ish, but I might go lower than you just to make sure you're...
correcting what I said.
Just say you're correcting what you said and you feel good about that and you don't feel bad and think, God, why do I keep doing this podcast? Because, you know, I'm losing it. So... Yeah, so I think it's a standard B for me because it's very enjoyable. And it does make me want to go and watch the sequel, so I think I will go and watch the sequel.
I think I'm going to watch the sequel as well.
I don't remember much about the remake. One thing I do remember about the remake is that the guy who plays McLovin in Superbad, Christopher Mintz Plasse, is Ed. Is Evil Ed.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That does make sense.
That kind of works.
There's loads of people in it. So I'm just looking at the cast there. So you've got Anton Yelchin, Christopher Mintz Plasse, Colin Farrell, David Tennant, Tony Collette, Dave Franco. Imogen Poots has got everyone, mate. It's got everyone. Everyone you could ever want.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the sequel. I don't remember if I've even seen it, to be honest, so it could be...
I don't think I've seen the sequel.
Actually, this would be a good one for like Halloween. Like, it feels like a good October kind of movie.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good October kind of movie, so yeah. I'm going to watch the sequel.
This week.
Bang in the middle of September. This week.
Yeah.
Very nice.
All right, man. So, next week we're doing... I Know We Did Last Summer.
Yeah, we'll do that for the next episode, definitely. So,
cool.
We'll be back in 2 weeks again, is that right?
Because you're away. I'm away next week. Yeah.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks again. So for now, we're still committing to the fortnightly episode. There we go. Very nice.
All right, man. So if you enjoyed the show, please consider becoming a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for a few music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider rating, reviewing, and joining the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. And thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a right horror dude.
Thank you very much, Luke. Thank you very much.
Gonna go pleasure. Turkish Delight Night Part 2.
Turkish Delight Night Part 2. What a great film.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.